The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Sparkling water, lemon, osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled.
So what's going out there, water lovers? You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. It's that rock and roll water show that you did not know Pittsfield has. And there's nothing like it on Earth. Not just the Berkshires, but all around the world. You gotta love your water. And we definitely do here.
The fool will get thirsty.
Super psyched. We got a second half of a two-episode series. I'm going to be talking with Andrew Lewin, who puts together something called Speaking for the Blue Network. And we'll have him the second half of the show. Super psyched about that. We got all sorts of music coming your way, some really important water news, some water poetry, and some serious comedy from a really great film, Forrest Gump. Got a little bit of water comedy from that. You know, maybe a little less comedy, but a lot more, you know, culturally relevant stuff. It's super psyched to be with you. I'm your Super Waterman, Ambassador for Water. We're here at Pittsfield Community Radio 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Mass. And then on 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And anywhere you can get your podcasts, you could find And So It Flows. You could also find our And So It Flows water song playlist on Spotify if you want to vibe out to the H2O vibe. Definitely go check that out. Save it, share it with your friends, and you can like, share, and subscribe our podcast. Give it a thumbs up, a five stars, whatever it is, and share it with your water loving friends, because when it gets down to it, this is about real. What's real in life, and that is life itself. Super psyched. Got a little bit of Aerosmith coming your way. This is Walk on Water. We'll be right back.
She took the back way home. summer hill, turned left onto the North Strand, and on and towards the sea. He said he was an artist, but he really painted billboards in large capital letters. Large capital letters. He was telling jokes, and nobody else would listen to him. I saw you that day, your lips are cherry red, your legs were crossed, your arms wide open, your hair was colored gold, and like a field of corn, you were blown by the wind, you were blown by the wind.
Okay, water lovers, you're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Super psyched to be with you today. We got all sorts of watery music coming on the rest of the show. We got a really great interview, second half of an interview that I taped with Andrew Lewin, who has a network of water shows, which is called Speaking for the Blue. You can find his podcast in other places. And you're listening here at Pittsfield Community Radio. And what we're providing here is really on the ground, locally created content for those who love water. That's what I'm doing here. But there's so many great shows here at WTBR. They get podcasts around the world. You got things like Deep Cuts, Mike's Amazing Music, got Jazz Collector, got Chuck and Billy's, got the Eminem show. You got lots and lots and lots of shows. And if you wanted to do a show and you're saying, Lay, what are we going to do? And I got a show. I want to do it. I got a friend. We're going to be co-podcasters together. What you do is you go to the WTBRFM.com website and you contact the programming committee and you pitch it. That's what you do. And if you're into TV and other kinds of things, you could do the same thing with PCTV, which is in the same building over on Federico Drive in beautiful Pittsfield, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Berkshires, in the Housatonic Valley, bringing this kind of really great stuff here and around the world. Super psyched about that. Got some really good water news coming your way, and this is from Circle of Blue. Let's see if we could find it. It's an important story, not so much about the local area, but the national stuff. And this is about the EPA, that wonderful environmental protection agency that has lost its way, in my worldview. And this one is on a national level. The EPA stalls a long-planned nitrate cancer review. And this is from this article from Circle of Blue. And we're going to listen to it right now. Super psyched about that. It's not the most positive story, but, you know, you got to know where we're standing so we know where we're going to go.
Long-planned nitrate cancer review as pollution crisis grows. By Circle of Blue. By Brian Binkowski, the new lead. August 4th, 2026. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, has backed off its reassessment of cancer-causing nitrates despite decades of research suggesting the contaminant is more harmful than previously thought and that nitrate pollution is at crisis levels in U.S. drinking water. The agency would not confirm the assessment was canceled, but the work has been stagnant for more than 2 years and the department responsible for it was eliminated. And scientists and health advocates say regardless of whether it has been canceled or is locked in a lengthy delay, Americans are paying the price with their health. The EPA set a threshold for nitrates in drinking water more than 30 years ago at a level designed to avoid harming babies after research showed that ingesting nitrates could trigger dangerously low oxygen in babies' blood, what's known as blue baby syndrome. The EPA announced it would reassess nitrates and nitrites in 2017 to look at other potential health impacts, including cancer, but the work was suspended in 2019 by the first Trump administration. The Biden administration restarted the work, and the EPA accepted public comments on the planned assessment in 2023, but the agency hasn't provided an update since. Earlier this year, the Trump administration eliminated the EPA's Office of Research and Development, which housed the Integrated Risk Information System, IRIS, and was responsible for such health assessments. The assessment was intended to do the hard science to support appropriate human health protections, said Tyler Lobdell, a senior staff attorney with Food and Water Watch. It's alarming that the Trump administration has decided to undermine that process. It's alarming that the Trump administration has decided to undermine that process. Tyler Lobdell, Food and Water Watch. Independent research has significantly advanced since the EPA set its drinking water threshold in 1991. Nitrates can be naturally occurring, but nitrate pollution in waterways has been tied to heavy use of nitrogen-based fertilizers and the spreading of large amounts of livestock manure on farm fields as fertilizer. Nitrate contamination has been linked to cancer and other health problems, particularly in prominent farm states. The current EPA nitrate threshold for nitrates under the Safe Drinking Water Act is 10 parts per million, ppm, a level that researchers and health advocates say is far too high to protect health. Studies have linked nitrate exposure below 10 ppm to increased risk of colorectal cancer, bladder cancer, thyroid disease, and other health problems. We need Iris to go and do another health assessment on nitrates because links to cancer and birth defects keep popping up in the scientific literature, said David Quirtney, a researcher and director of the University of Iowa's Center for Health Effects of Environmental Contamination. Iris assessments don't create legal standards but inform the EPA when it sets drinking water limits. The EPA's delayed assessment is particularly troubling because the agency itself has acknowledged increasing evidence that nitrates contribute to cancers and birth defects, Quirtney said. The EPA cited new science on cancer and birth defects in the 2010 Drinking Water Standards Review as well as in its 2017 Scoping Review. That's the EPA saying this is science worth paying attention to, Quirtney said. They've opened the door acknowledging the need for more assessment and then just left it ajar. Bridget Hirsch, press secretary for the EPA, did not comment on the status of the assessment, but said that research on nitrate in drinking water was largely transitioned to the Office of Water, as part of the agency's strategic reorganization to better align scientific research with policy development and program implementation. Hirsch also pointed to the agency's six-year review of nitrate completed in 2024 that concluded the current health threshold did not need to be revised. Nitrates pervasive in U.S. drinking water. The stalled assessment comes as nitrate pollution becomes more pervasive. An April report from the Environmental Working Group, EWG, found more than 60 million Americans get their water from sources contaminated with elevated levels of nitrate pollution. The report found that the majority of the pollution is likely coming from agricultural manure or fertilizer runoff. They've opened the door acknowledging the need for more assessment and then just left it ajar. David Quirtney, University of Iowa. The water systems with the highest and most frequent nitrate levels were in heavy agricultural states. And federal research is key to bolstering drinking water protections in those states, said Nancy Stoner, a senior attorney at the Environmental Law and Policy Center. States rely upon the EPA to be able to do deep science. Whether it's drinking water standards or water quality standards, most of that is done at the federal level, Stoner said. The nitrate problem is particularly bad in Iowa, which is the nation's top corn and hog producer and has loads of nitrates washing into waterways from manure and fertilizer. Iowa also has the second highest rate of cancer in the nation and is only one of three states where cancer is rising, according to the National Institutes of Health. For many types of cancer, the state's numbers dwarf national averages, and nitrates are a key culprit. In science, we're unfortunately not going to get something very definitive that this contaminant is causing this, Quirtney said. The point is that there are now enough converging lines of evidence out there. The Des Moines Water Utility has frequently asked residents to cut back on water use over the past few years because nitrate levels are so high in drinking water supplies that the utility is having a hard time treating the nitrates in the water. The Des Moines and Raccoon Rivers in Iowa are in the top 1% of rivers nationwide for nitrate concentration, with an estimated 80% of the contamination coming from agriculture. Even for places like this where the current nitrate drinking water standard applies, we've seen such high levels of nitrate in source water that municipal water utilities are struggling to remove it, said Stacy Woods, a research director for the Food and Environment Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Woods added that nitrate's health impacts extend beyond farming states. Nitrate pollution can travel hundreds of miles through streams and rivers and groundwater and other connected water bodies, she said. That water-to-water pathway is how fertilizer in the Midwest creates pollution all the way down in the Gulf of Mexico. Pressing the EPA for information. In May, Stoner and Woods co-authored a letter, which was signed by more than 80 health and environmental groups, sent to Health and Human Services, HHS, Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin urging the officials to protect Americans from a public health emergency driven by nitrate pollution. It is imperative that EPA and HHS act now to address this public health emergency in Iowa and across the country, the letter states. Your agencies should immediately identify and eliminate sources of nitrate pollution in drinking water and provide funds to communities to reduce nitrate to safe levels. Stoner said she and others met with some officials at the EPA about the letter, but haven't received an official response from the agency, nor have they heard from HHS. Food and Water Watch sued the EPA in June, alleging the agency has failed to release records under Freedom of Information Act, FOIA, requests about the stalled nitrate assessment. Food and Water Watch requested such records in August 2025 after the EPA had cut staffing and announced plans to eliminate the Office of Research and Development. Lobdell said he worked with EPA staffers for several months to get the records, and they told him scientists were being reassigned. That's pretty vague, but it's clear that the team, the department, and the organizational structure that supported this kind of work is gone, he said. Featured image, Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency Lee Zeldin.
Well, that was from Circle of Blue. That was quite a long article, but I played the whole thing because we're in a little bit of a conundrum. The very agencies that are here for the protection have, in my worldview, may have lost their way. And in a state like Massachusetts, like any other state, we do put faith into some of these institutions that we hope are going to work. But there's something that might not be working there. So what is there to do? And no specific answer is coming right now, but this is something to, like, take a look at, because our guest next week will have some really great news, and you want to pay a special attention to the next episode, because we're going to have an episode on some really good grassroots victories that are happening in something that where people feel very strongly about, and that's going to be in next week's program. Little on later in this show, we're going to have Andrew Lewin of the Speak for the Blue. He's got a podcast and a network, Speak for the Blue Network, it's called, in the second half of that. You know, what is there to do? You know, our job, I don't know. I don't have an answer. Most of you who may be listening may not have an answer to where we find ourselves. And every now and then, it's good to go back to the world of culture to get ourselves some ideas of what there is to do. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. We got this little poetry clip. It's Rain by Edward Thomas. Let me see if I'm finding the right one. Just want to make sure I find the right one. And by the way, let's go through the music that we already heard. We started with Walk on Water with Aerosmith off the Big Ones album. We had Steam, Peter Gabriel, and that was from the Us album. And then Walk to the Water. A lot of walking going on, and that was from the Joshua Tree album of U2. Coming up soon, we're going to have some Alanis Morissette, and also another band called the Mountain Goats, so you want to pay attention to that. Let's get some poetry going on. Just want to get this piece of poetry in the show. Let's go here. This is a poem clip called Seashore, and this was brought to us by a physicist, Richard Feynman. Really psyched to share this because it's when science and poetry meet.
Feynman once stood at the seashore, and he wrote something that reads less like physics and more like poetry. I stand at the seashore alone and start to think. There are the rushing waves, mountains of molecules, each stupidly minding its own business, trillions apart, yet forming white surf in unison. He was describing water, but he was also describing light.
He was also describing life. That was pretty cool. You know, when you get science and poetry to intersect as possible, because water is one of the most intersectional items that we got going on. It touches everything. We got a little Alanis Morissette with Ironic. You are listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. We're bringing you the kind of water culture, water news, water music, and all sorts of deep water talk right here on WTBR 89.7, WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR in Lee, and anywhere you can get your podcasts. Here and around the world, you can check it on Apple, Amazon. You could check it on iHeartRadio. There's literally dozens of places that you can find it. Just look for And So It Flows. So many cool songs that have something to do with water. And let's see if we could find ourselves a little bit of an interview that I recently... the second option for Andrew Lewin. This is... Let's see. We got here. This is part two. Andre Lewin speaking for The Blue. And this is part two of that episode. And that's so cool.
Well, Prime Minister Harper was in power before Trudeau. It was fossil fuel or bust. And that's how our economy went. It goes, you know, when oil is up, we do really well. Our economy is doing really well. When oil went down, our economy hit the tank. Like, we didn't have the housing crisis that you guys had in 2008. But because oil went down, we had a recession. Wow. But when Trudeau got in, as much as people love him or hate him,
A little bit of breakdown there with tech, but we'll bring it right back again. This is Andre Lewin from Speaking for the Blue, the second half of the interview I did with him. And here we go again. We're going to start where the last one was off, and we were talking about how Canada is somewhat of a natural resource country. Where there's a lot of oil, a lot of other kind of extracted stuff. So we get into it just now.
When Prime Minister Harper was in power before Trudeau, it was fossil fuel or bust. And that's how our economy went. It goes, you know, when oil is up, we do really well. Our economy is doing really well. When oil went down, our economy hit the tank. Like, we didn't have the housing crisis that you guys had in 2008. But because oil went down, we had a recession. Wow. But when Trudeau got in, as much as people love him or hate him, he really, like, he invested in a pipeline, but then he canceled the pipeline to the East Coast. So that was, like, so again, it's like a win-lose kind of situation.
Yeah, like half a loaf, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, and he spent, like, $4.5 billion of taxpayer money to help expand the pipeline for oil companies who weren't really Canadian. They were foreign, but they provided Canadian jobs. Plus, the oil we get from the Asian market's a lot better. Because you got to remember, like, our biggest, Canada's biggest customer for oil and gas is the United States. And so before Trump got in this last one, we were selling at a cheap rate to the United States as a deal because, you know, we're allies and we didn't have anybody else to sell to. So we had one client, which was the United States. And so we actually sold at a lower rate. And then, you know, Keystone Pipeline got taken off the table, which was good for environment, but not necessarily good for our economy. And then so when Trump came in and he's doing all this tariff stuff, he's kind of like, yeah, we're going to anytime we don't like what you say, we're going to give you 50% tariffs or, you know, this and that. Like Carney got in, who's international banker, that kind of stuff. And he's very conservative as well, but he was on the liberal side. And he's decided to change everything. So right now, going back to your original question, right now where it stands is now because we are divesting from the reliance on the U.S. for oil and gas to sell to you guys.
Come on, we're trustworthy.
We are now expanding more to the West Coast, and now we're expanding to the East Coast. So there's being proposed that pipelines are being built. Now, the interesting thing is there's a caveat in there. All these memorandums of understanding that the federal government is signing with, like, Alberta, the Alberta Premier, which is like your governor, and on the East Coast and like Ontario and stuff like that, is all predicated on the approval of Indigenous land. Like, so if the Indigenous people say yes, then it will go through. Now, because usually the provinces want this to happen. Now, the interesting thing here is a lot of the Indigenous people are not just going to sit back anymore like they used to and just do the consultations and say yes or no. Not only do they want a piece of the action, but they want to manage it the way they normally manage. So they traditionally manage their land. So when, I am paraphrasing some Indigenous leaders and consultants that I've talked to in the past. So please don't, if I say something wrong, I apologize. But essentially when a proposal comes to a lot of Indigenous people or groups, they will look at it and say, does it benefit their people? Does it benefit the land? Right? Those are the two things that they look. There's a third thing. I forget what that third thing is. But it has to benefit. It has to have three benefits. And if it doesn't, then it's no good. So if the money's there and they get a piece, like, they're looking at taking half a lot of these pieces. So it'll be interesting to see if the government will, any of the governments will agree to it or the companies will agree to it. And they may not have a choice. But they also want it run properly. They want monitoring, and they're going to be involved in the monitoring. They're going to be involved in looking after the land and the water and all that kind of stuff where they have jurisdictions from their treaty negotiations.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting, but they're still probably going to go ahead with the pipelines. And so it's again, it's a bit of a love-hate relationship here. And it's a fine line to balance on because we're contributing more towards fossil fuel pollution and greenhouse gases, but we're also making sure that our country is not going to be left hanging when and if a president down south decides to, like, hey, you know what, we're just going to look inwards and we're just going to do everything inwards and we're not going to rely on anybody else and we're going to kind of I would say mistreat our allies, you know, in the way that that's been done over the last couple of years. So we have this prime minister who's trying to help divest that dependence on the U.S. because of what's been happening, but also set us up for success on a lot of trade, little trade agreements with other countries that are willing to do trade with us. And we've seen some benefit from it, and hopefully we'll see some benefit in the future.
About trade, you know, I trade. There's some kind of really good stuff. When I play a song by Tim Hicks called Stronger Beer,
okay.
The beer is mostly water.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to have, you can see it's not a real dichotomy, but you can see the differences and the similarities between cultures of north of the border, south of the border. You know, we got Dunkin' Donuts, you got Tim Hortons, or Timmy's.
Yeah.
The fun part is also a very straightforward part. You were speaking to it and why countries like yourselves and other formerly friends, good friends of the United States of America are taking a second look at that relationship. And I think the work you do, work I do, has us look at any and all relationships in that space.
Mm-hmm.
Because on your neighbor, it's gonna create a little bit of a breakdown in the ability to cooperate,
mm-hmm.
which water is part of that. It's way beyond identity. It's way beyond politics. It's about the source of being alive on the planet while we're alive.
Yeah.
So getting to know it, getting to inquire into it. But really, you know, if truth be told, you know, I know my show, I'm not straight out political, but it's in that space. There's that too. So
yeah, it plays a role, right?
Kind of like a good song is like a Hallmark card.
Yeah.
You get
the
message.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. And I should say too, like, the thing is what's been happening in the past 2 years is a very different thing that's happened in the past, you know, and I think, you know, I've worked with the Canadian federal government before on the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement, which is a binational agreement between Canada and the U.S. on managing the Great Lakes. And it's a perfect example of how well we work together to ensure that the water's protected, the water's good quality, and that people, because, you know, Great Lakes is the largest freshwater, you know, system in the world. And it's the source water for a lot of drinking water for people in and around the area that serves, you know, Ontario, part of Manitoba, you know, Minnesota, Indiana, I think Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, New York. You know, it serves a lot of places in North America, like just those surrounding. And so we have this binational agreement and the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement to ensure that we continue to manage it properly. Because, I mean, you probably remember, Leslie, or hearing the stories, like in the 70s, Lake Erie essentially set itself on fire because it was so polluted, right?
And we have Silver Lake in Pittsfield, yay.
Right. So
1923, too.
Right, so like making sure that we have this binational agreement to that both countries are responsible, like knowing what both countries are responsible for and then working together in those areas where we overlap or like manage on either side, I think is a really great example on how well we can do it and how much better the water quality is in like Ontario from when it was in all the Great Lakes from when it was in the 70s, and also adapting to some of the major issues that the Great Lakes are facing now. You know, like I had people that I've worked with who've had colleagues stateside that they've known for decades and worked really well together for decades through workshops, and you know, they collaborated on research and they collaborated on doing policies together and learning from each other and like debating each other and healthy debates as scientists and policymakers do. And I think that's a point that we don't get to hear a lot about, but these are people from state governments, from federal governments on both sides and provincial governments on both sides of the border that are working really well to try to maintain really good water quality and adapt to changes that are not so good for water quality and managing the Great Lakes system itself and the watersheds that are around it, right? So I think you know, we it's easy to focus in on what's happening now and how challenging it is, and look, you'll get frustrated, I get frustrated, we get a lot of people who are frustrated with certain comments that are said, like, you know, when the wildfires happened here in Ontario, well, they're still going on, but when the smoke came down south and it went past the border and went all the way down to DC, you know, and then we hear the comments from politicians being like, you know, there should be sanctions, there should be this, there should be that. That gets frustrating.
I have my fan on high.
Yeah.
So push to that.
But I mean, gets frustrating to hear. But I think, you know, if you look at things that are not being spoken, you know, on the news all the time, and where we're seeing cooperation on both sides from, like, whether it be states, and it doesn't matter who's in charge or what party's in charge, we all work together because we know it's to the benefit of both of our countries and including Mexico as well. And so I think there's a lot of stuff that goes on that we see in the news. And we focus on, and there, I understand why, because it's pretty challenging. But also, there's a lot of really good stuff that happens behind the scenes, and that's one of the things that I like to try and do on the podcast, is to make sure that people understand that there are some really cool people in the world of science and the world of conservation, whether it's freshwater, whether it's on land, whether it's in the marine realm, and that we're really working well together to help. Like, we have a lot of challenges ahead of us, and there's some things we have control on, and there's some things we don't. It doesn't matter if you're government or not, like, you know, but we are a lot of us are working together to make sure and supporting each other to make sure that we can do really well. You know, like, speaking of wildfires, there was a Canadian who ended up unfortunately passing away in Colorado fighting the fires. You know, when the Santa Barbara or Santa Ana winds were affecting the wildfires in California, you know, Canada sent water bombers to go and make sure that things are done, and vice versa. It happens vice versa. Mexico sent a bunch of firefighters up to BC over the past week to help fight the fires in BC. We get a group of firefighters from Cameroon every year that come up to fight the fires in BC. You know, like, it goes to show that, and it doesn't always get publicized, but every once in a while they'll highlight on the news. And that just goes to show that countries work together to help each other out. Like in Cameroon, they may not have the resources, you know, to help, but they do that as a friendly gesture to help us out. Yeah. You know, we're a developed country. They're, you know, arguably a developing country. And here they are helping us out. Mexico's helping us out. We'll help Mexico if they need it. You know, and this is what we do as neighbors. Yeah, and I think we still do that. We just don't, you don't hear about it. All we hear about are the politicians who want to get the next soundbite and cause havoc or distract or doing whatever they're trying to do. You know, but not focus on the needs of, you know, fighting wildfires, fighting water quality, making sure, you know, we reduce climate change. And then in the cooperation that's actually happening between our countries on a level that's not political, on a public servant level, people who actually care about the environment and care about other people. Yep. You know, like we, like, you know, Canadians are pissed at the U.S. politicians.
Come on.
Right. There's no doubt about that.
But it's a break. We however, don't have one fascist dictator in China.
but however, like, we also love the American people. Like, as like we've loved you guys ever since, you know, like, and I think there's a difference there, you know, and I think there's could be a lot of change that happens for the good. And I think we all lose focus, including myself. We all lose focus of that because of the frustrating periods that we're going through.
One of the things, you know, and I'm going to ask you this question first, and then I'm going to go into a couple of thoughts about this question. Who inspired you to put this together, this Empire for Water, Speak for Blue? Who inspired? Like, was there an inspirational moment that you said, wow?
I mean, there's a lot of people, when you look back, there's a lot of people who kind of inspired me to take this on. My dad, you know, entrepreneur, like, always been able, like, if nobody can do it, he can do it, like, better. Or take up that mantra and do it with having his own business and stuff like that. I look to him in terms of, like, getting a job. If you want something done and nobody's doing it, take up the mantle and do it yourself.
Yeah.
But then there was, like, there were two conferences that I went to in 2009, 2010, maybe 2011. One was I went to CHOW, which was the ocean during Oceans Week on the Capitol Hill in Washington. And I met Charlotte Vick in person for the first time. And if you don't know Charlotte was the marketing person at Mission Blue for Dr. Sylvia Earle, was a friend of Dr. Sylvia Earle's. They're still friends, obviously.
I remember worked with
her for probably 25 years. And she's like a connector. And so I met with her. We sat down. I remember we sat down on a bench, like, just in front of the Capitol and building, and we were just chit-chatting. And she was like, oh, I'll have to put you in touch with so-and-so. I'll have to put you in touch with so-and-so. And you're going to have to speak to this person. And she just kind of, like, gave me the keys, you know, to be like, hey, you should really follow your passions. And she was a mentor of mine from a communication and marketing standpoint. I learned from her, you know, daily, and just the way she, it wasn't even just like she would teach you, it was the way she conducted herself and helped out so many people. And that's what I try to do now, like, not only through the podcast by introducing people on this platform, but to the audience, but also, like, I try and connect people together, whether they're looking for jobs, they're looking for insights, they're looking for answers to questions, to people that I know who have those answers. So that was one. And then there was another, and there was something said at CHOW that really caught my eye the first time, and it was, we're preaching to the choir. So it was a scientist that was up, and they were it was actually Carl Safina, Dr. Carl Safina, who was a longtime ocean scientist and advocate, bird scientist, actually, an advocate, seabird. But he said, he's like, you know, we sit here and we talk about marine protected areas, we talk about the science, we talk about how much it works if we follow these policies, but he's like, the thing is that we're preaching to the choir. In the audience at that time, it was a bunch of scientists and conservationists and policymakers and so forth. And so it was great to be able to hear that, but then it's like, we're preaching to the choir. We're not preaching to the people who really need to hear it. You know, the people who aren't in this room, the people who are trying to figure out what they need to do, but they don't have the guidance to do that. So that kind of caught my ear, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I'm like, you're right, we are, every time we go to a conference, and I learn so much, but we're preaching to the choir. When we write a paper, a scientific journal paper, a peer-reviewed paper, it's only shared with people in science because they have the subscriptions. Because I don't know if you know, but science, peer-reviewed science journals are enormous amounts of money to subscribe, and only academic institutions or government institutions can actually subscribe to it. And so it's a huge sham in terms of cost and stuff like that. But you're only preaching to the people who are reading it, which are other scientists.
Exactly.
And then I went to another conference in Canada called Coastal Zone Canada, and it was in Prince Edward Island. And I was sitting there, and at the end, the last keynote, the person said the same thing. You know, we're talking about a lot of, like, water quality, nutrification, you know, climate change, all this kind of stuff. We all understand what needs to be done. We are preaching to the choir. And we need to change that. We need to start speaking outside. And at that time, science communication was in blog format and stuff like that, and people were starting to do that. But it was really left to, like, the Sylvia Earles and the Jacques Cousteaus and the Fabien Cousteaus and all those people who were out there doing that kind of stuff on television. But scientists, as professionals and being paid as a marine biologist, we weren't speaking to everybody because, you know, journalists would take our comments out of context. They were manipulating the message. You know, oil and gas companies were marketing hard against us, you know, to try and say that climate change wasn't a real thing.
Water doesn't matter. You could drink oil.
Exactly. And that was like a challenging time. And then all of a sudden, like, a lot of more and more people started to communicate science. And that's when I really started. And because I went to another conference called Oceans Online, there was Science Online, and there was other scientists that were talking about what was successful to them and how they felt about, you know, talking about science and doing science communication about marine biology, terrestrial biology, and oceanography and all that kind of stuff.
Nice.
And it was cool. Like, it was fun. And so then I, like, that's kind of what inspired me to really push forward and do this kind of thing. And then the other thing is, as I started to get into the groove, I was like, there's no turning back. When I blogging was challenging for me because I'm not that great of a writer compared to others. Doing YouTube at the time, to do videos and edit all those videos, was difficult for me. It was challenging because I had toddlers at the time and I wanted to spend more time with them, and I had a full-time job. But once I found podcasting, that that was easy. That's something I could do. Audio, read an article, read a journal article, sit down, think about it for a bit, and then just regurgitate my and add my thoughts to it. That was something that I fell in love with. And then interview people that I think deserve to be in front of an audience. And so I have the privilege now of having a really great, it's not a huge audience when you look at like the Joe Rogans of the world and stuff like that, but it's a really engaged audience and it's a fun audience. Like when I go to conferences, I see the people. When I go out sometimes, you know, they hear my voice or they introduce me, like, I listen to your podcast, like they really enjoy it or they DM me and stuff like that. And that's what I love about it. And that motivates me even more to do more episodes.
I'm super psyched because you are someone who's walked the talk, talked the talk, engaged people, and it's a really great story of your inspiration, and I think that's amazing, and I'm proud. For those who are just tuning in, Andrew Lewin with Speak Up for Blue, I'm Wesley with the And So Flows podcast, and my inspiration was more in the sense of John F. Kennedy, when presidents could be actually their word, and I think Canada and Kennedy, while they sound similar in the first continent, they had a good relationship.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Yeah.
And he was literally our last water president. You know, you can say Nixon did something, but that was only because Pete Seeger. Because a lot of movement from the Hudson Valley to get that Clean Water Act passed. And, you know, Nixon finally saw the value. But beyond that, before then, Kennedy was a water president. You know, Navy guy, swam for his safety of him and his crew, sailing. And he said something which, you know, I saw and I was like, wow, I'm up for that. And he said, the person who handles water should get 2 Nobel Prizes, one for peace and one for science.
Yeah.
And wow, what does that mean? That means like he put up the mile markers and I'm like, well, that's a game. And it doesn't mean I'm going to get it. It means that it's a game worth playing.
Yeah.
And it could also be a community of people taking that.
Right.
It doesn't have to be one person. But anyway, it's way better than a FIFA prize for those soccer lovers out there. I don't want a FIFA prize for science. I don't want a FIFA, well, maybe one for peace since Trump got one. What the heck? But the game is really, how do you do that? And speaking to your concern about speaking to the choir, that's why I bring music into it. And that's why I bring science into it. And that's why, you know, in Hungary, Budapest, you go there for 3 months, go to one of their Turkish baths. It's part of their national insurance system. You get in and you cure yourself. It's called balneotherapy. You get rid of the toxins, you relax, your cortisol level go down, you create community, you eat some food, get a back rub, and people are healthier. So Danube is one of the cleanest rivers in the world. When, you know, it's that relationship to water as medicine. Perhaps not every medicine has to be made of petrochemicals. Thank you, John Rockefeller. You've done enough. Take the load off your back. Let us get our water back. I write a blog, both on Substack and my company blog called Water Celebration. And this blog was about how America lost its connection to the healing water that most other countries use on some level. I know in the Great White North, you know, saunas are a big thing. You know, people go and get sweaty. And that's the thing, if you know, that could be part of a medical system to help people clean the PFAS and the PCBs and the microplastics out of their body. Sweat it out. Eat a lot of garlic. Sweat. Go in a cold plunge. Close those pores up. Go back and sweat them more. We don't have to be roach motels. And we can allow the poison out of our system as well. So it doesn't mean that people who get sick have to constantly get petrochemicals pumped into the body or radiation and wonder why they're not going to be living long.
Right.
It's looking at, you know, peace, let's say. Imagine on a peace conference, like the one that, you know, our current president is not being very nice to that process. But imagine if any peace process that you have to hang out, all the security guards, the leaders, the people who are negotiating, have to hang out by the ocean or their waterfall with their favorite security guard or dog or concubine or whatever. They get to hang out there for a week before they go to the conference, mandatory. They get their, whatever, brainwaves centered for at least a little bit. And for the first day and a half of the conference, they can move mountains. Because their creative juices come back. They could become, they start to get less anxious and start to look at our enemy around every corner.
Right.
And they could say, oh my God, common humanity. What a novel idea.
Yeah.
And perhaps we could get beyond this. Water has that power of allowing our minds to get larger and think from outside. What I call for the And So Flows podcast is we bring water outside the cup.
Right. I love it. I love it. And that's very similar. It's very similar to like Wallace J. Nichols' book, Blue Mind, right? Which really looks at the benefits to our brain when we use the color blue, or we're around nature, or we're at the oceans. You know, there's a reason why we go on vacation. A lot of us go by the beach because we want to look at blue water, and we want to be around nature, and we want to be in a forest and do hiking because it resets our mind. And I think that's really important. And this is like, Leslie, this has been, I know we could probably talk for about like 3 hours or so on all this kind of stuff, but this has been amazing to have this type of talk and to really get down into a lot of the stuff that's happening. I think we covered quite a bit.
Here are my water glasses.
There you go. I got your water glasses. I love it. But this has been so much fun to have you on the podcast. And as this is going to work, I'll be on your podcast. You're going to be on my podcast. This recording is going to be, has like a double meaning to it. So I think it'll be a lot of fun. But
Leslie, it's been a random show. Andrew Lewin, another super waterman.
Wonderful. Waterman, yeah, no, it's been great to have you on. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Be well.
You too.
Pretty amazing, gentleman, Andrew Lewin. Thanks for tuning in. Next week, we're going to have a really great conversation with a former journalist and current activist in the de-icing of America, and get more to it. It's not about planes. And, you know, it is regarding ice, which is water related. So stay tuned for that. That'll be next week. And super psyched to have had you. Thanks for being a water lover here at And So It Flows, your only show for H2O 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, and anywhere you get your podcasts.
Lemon fizzy water, sparkling water, lemon, osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled. See, in trouble. Water, water. Water, water. Water, water. In the abundance of water, the fool will get thirsty.